Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It is Friday, March 19th, 2021. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of publishing. And Robin East, PW Senior Writer, joins me today with his editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So our top news item this week, Andrew, comes by way of academic publishing. After a tense 2-year stalemate, Elsevier and the University of California announced this week they have signed a groundbreaking open access agreement.
Yeah, so big news on a story that we've been covering for the last 2+ years, although one that's been quiet for a while, for the last year at least. And that news is, as you say, the world's leading scholarly publisher, Elsevier, has finally come to terms with the University of California on what can be fairly described, I think, as a historic open access agreement. Now, under the 4-year deal that is set to take effect on April 1st, University of California researchers and faculty will get access to pretty much all of Elsevier's journal content. But here's the key. The deal also gives UC authors the option to publish their research in Elsevier journals under an open access model. In other words, those articles would be free to read by researchers around the world, with the cost of publication being covered by author publishing charges. Notably, this includes articles in all of Elsevier's journals, pretty much, including the prestigious Cell Press and Lancet titles. And it's reported to be the first such open access agreements for those flagship journals.
And certainly the players involved here are heavyweights in their respective classes. Elsevier, as you say, is the world's largest scholarly publisher and publishes more than 500,000 articles annually in 2,500 journals, while the UC system includes more than 280,000 students and more than 227,000 faculty and staff. So no doubt the talks that led to this agreement were arduous on both sides.
Yeah, this was by any account a lengthy, intense, and somewhat bruising negotiation. But I do believe this agreement is a major milestone for the open access movement, not only for the University of California, but for the larger open access movement in the United States. And I say that as someone who started covering open access some 20 years ago when I used to cover scholarly publishing exclusively. And this coming after I used to work at an academic press. I was an editor at Oxford University Press back in the day. And the reason is because, as you say, this is a deal that involves two titans in the scholarly communication field. For its part, Elsevier is the biggest player by far, with, you know, the most prestigious journals, and they essentially ushered in the digital journal decades ago. And the University of California, meanwhile, as you noted, it's huge. In fact, it accounts for about 10% of the U.S. research output. So, you know, they're not only a huge part of Elsevier's customer base, they're also a huge part of Elsevier's content base. In other words, UC consumes a lot of articles from Elsevier and contributes a lot of articles to Elsevier. But I feel like we should back up on this a little, because to understand the impact of this deal, why it's such a big deal, no pun intended, I think you have to understand, you know, a little bit about, you know, the movement toward open access. Now, a lot of our listeners probably already do, and I certainly know you do, Chris, because I've seen you host many a discussion on this very topic over the years at various book fairs. But, you know, maybe it'd be worthwhile for me to sort of back up and try to briefly set the stage for our listeners.
All right, then, Andrew, let's hear it.
Okay, so here goes. So as I said, Elsevier basically created this robust digital e-journal marketplace we have today, you know, decades ago. They were by far the most aggressive, most successful in contracting with academic journals and then migrating them to their new digital platform. And over the years, academic libraries and the academics they serve, of course, and other institutions, make no mistake, have benefited greatly from the innovation that Elsevier invested in and brought to the space. Print journals simply could not substitute for the access and the robust tools that Elsevier ushered in with the digital journal. But rather quickly, libraries and administrators also began to sour on the price tag. You know, there was price inflation every year, and the business model was seen as somewhat inequitable. Notably, you know, these bundles, known as the big deal, was this way that, you know, Elsevier began charging institutions millions for access to journal bundles that, you know, in theory were cheaper than licensing access to each individual high-use, high-need title. So think of Elsevier's big deal model like your cable company, like Spectrum or Comcast. Maybe you only really watch or need a few channels, but you have to buy a plan that includes hundreds of other channels too. And if you don't, well, then the price on those few channels you want goes through the roof. And for Elsevier, you know, the profit margins over the years have been very, very healthy, we'll say. You know, remember, these publications are not optional. If you're a researcher, you need access to these Elsevier works. And if you're a researcher and an academic, you need to publish in these journals if you want to advance in your career. So I think it was these rising costs and circumstances that played a large part in driving the open access movement right from the outset. That's, you know, about two decades ago when it really sort of got going in earnest. But also a key driver here, not just cost, but the mission of academic publishing, which is to disseminate works as widely as possible, because science builds on science, obviously. And that sounds like a job for the internet, right? I mean, we have the technology to make research widely available. And you know, we want this stuff to be widely available with as few barriers as possible. And hey, one thing we know the web can do is give stuff away for free. So why are we investing so much time and effort and money into locking research down? Now, Elsevier absolutely deserves props for its investment. It was visionary at the time. But should that really give them such a position of power? And that's the question that academics over the years have really pulled into question. As academics saw it, here was Elsevier reaping huge profits for shareholders while draining library budgets and locking up the works of academics who didn't write their research for the purpose of profit, but for the dissemination of knowledge and, of course, for their own personal advancement, promotion, and tenure. And also, a lot of these academics refereed or edited content for a lot of these Elsevier journals, for which they got little money. And oftentimes they didn't get anything. A lot of referees do their work for free. In essence, the SCM business model, it's been said over the years, works kind of like this. The public and, you know, academic institutions produce research, which they then hand over to these publishers who format, edit, and package the research, and then sell it back to these institutions and to the public at a really high markup. Simplistic, yes, but that's the general gist of the market. So over the years, researchers around the world sort of came to agree that this subscription access system was not serving their needs. But changing the system, a system on which so much depended, was like turning a battleship, right? It takes time and it takes a lot of space. So here I'm going to skip over some of the juicy parts of open access history because we'd be here all day, right? There's the NIH mandate, there's funder mandates and self-archiving and green and gold open access, and the upstart open access journal movement like Public Library of Science, PLOS journals, right? You have the recent introduction of Plan S in Europe. Now, all of this plays a part in this story. We're just going to skip over that for here. Instead, I'm going to go right to what drove the headlines this week, and that is that the University of California faculty administrators have committed to open access, and not just to save money, but because it is the right thing to do in their estimation. And when its $11 million subscription deal was about to expire in 2019, University of California officials held firm, demanding that Elsevier come to the table and negotiate a transformative open access deal, which Elsevier initially refused. And that led to this impasse, which lasted for some 2 years until this deal was finally announced this week.
And by most accounts, Andrew, this was not an easy negotiation. And you said, though, 2 years ago that you saw such a deal, though, was inevitable.
Yeah, it was certainly not easy. In February of 2019, UC officials walked away from its subscription deal with Elsevier, demanding that the publisher negotiate this transformative open access deal. But it was never going to be easy because, well, frankly, Elsevier is no stranger to tough negotiations. So Elsevier held its ground. Eventually, they cut off UC's access after its subscription had expired sometime in July of 2019, I believe that was. Now, for Elsevier, I'll note, over their history, basically everything is a negotiation. I mean, they've faced boycotts and lawsuits and everything, but these things always just seem to fade away with the announcement of a new contract eventually. So for Elsevier, it seems like actions like the one University of California was undertaking was just all part of the game. It was all in the negotiation. But this time was different because open access, quite frankly, in recent years has hit a tipping point. And some UC researchers even went so far not only to support their faculty Senate resolution in support of open access, but they publicly announced their refusal to submit articles to Elsevier journals or to serve on Elsevier editorial boards until they had a deal. Meanwhile, over this last 2 years of tussling with Elsevier, UC officials have been negotiating transformational open access deals with other scholarly publishers. In fact, I think 8 in total in addition to the Elsevier deal now. And this included a groundbreaking open access agreement with the world's second leading academic publisher, Springer Nature, last year in June of 2020. And the University of California announced just three more deals last week with the Royal Society, the Company of Biologists, and Canadian Science Publishing. For its part, we should also note that Elsevier, while not striking this kind of deal with the University of California, had been striking a handful of these open access agreements in Europe, including one with the Royal Danish Library, for example. So I think all of this was sort of leading up to this moment, which I'm sure both sides knew had to come eventually. And in a Q&A this week, University of California's Jeffrey McKee Mason said that that moment, the tipping point moment in the negotiations, came last June, in June of 2020, after a year of silence, when Elsevier came back with a deal that McKee Mason said showed a willingness to find common ground. And I'll also point out, it's the same time that the deal with Springer Nature was announced. But again, this is more than a new deal between two titans. I think this is really a watershed moment for open access. And I'm going to refer back to McKee Mason's Q&A, which is on the University of California site and is well worth a read. Ultimately, McKee Mason said, we're trying to make this a standard way of doing business so that all agreements are open access and all scholarly publishers will stop selling subscriptions. Those are important words. There it is. Stop selling subscriptions. Open access was the goal here. Now, I want to make one other thing clear here, too, and that's that open access doesn't mean that scholarly publishing has to be or even will be less profitable to Elsevier or for any other publisher. I think it just represents a shift in the way we do business, right? The costs of publishing are going to have to be covered somehow. Someone has got to pay, whether it's public funding or funding bodies, university subsidies. And frankly, I think it could probably even benefit Elsevier if it spent less money and less time focusing on paywalls and negotiations and, you know, denying access and was able to direct those funds into more publications and more tools. So, you know, you consider all the recent ineffective injunctions publishers have gotten against the pirate site Sci-Hub as an example, right? And what's notable, what's always been notable to me about that story is that researchers, you know, they don't really hate Sci-Hub, right? They acknowledge that it's like a pirate site, but they kind of appreciate what Sci-Hub is doing, and they actually like the way Sci-Hub's interface works. So that, to me, always signaled that an open access deal eventually was in the cards. But look, academics are still going to want to publish in Elsevier's most prestigious journals because it's good for their careers. It's good for them, and it's good for science, too, because these are journals that are refereed and you can trust them. Just putting stuff up on your blog, well, that just doesn't do it for a scholar, you know. So I think the last 2 years, the tough negotiations and the PR battle that's gone on has been unfortunate, but these things do take time. And the resulting deal, like I said, I think was inevitable. And I think both sides have actually come out pretty well in this deal. And what's more, I think this is a giant step toward open access, which benefits all of us who are invested in scientific research, a point that I think the pandemic has helped drive home. So there's probably going to be more bumps in the road ahead, but I think it's fair to say the road is at last finally bending toward open access. And when we finally are at the next Frankfurt Book Fair, I'm going to look forward to hearing what your panelists have to say on the matter, Chris.
And I will look forward to seeing you in the front row, Andrew Albanese. Thanks for joining me today with your analysis.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, across the European Union, fact-checkers, media literacy experts, and academic researchers are collaborating to fight online disinformation. The European Digital Media Observatory, established in June 2020, hopes to counter fake news and other digital disinformation with facts and research across the European Union, says Paula Gori, EDMO Secretary General and Project Manager Leader.
The idea is to have national hubs or multinational hubs covering all member states in Europe. And they have this role if you want to feed the EDMO central platform. And in particular, they will detect, analyze, and disclose disinformation campaigns at national or multinational and EU level. They will analyze the disinformation campaign's impact on society and democracy, especially in the countries they're active in. They will promote media literacy activities, which, as you might know, are very often very related to the specific countries. And they will monitor online platform policy and the digital media ecosystem in cooperation with the national authorities.
Fact checkers for Europe. Next on this CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.